Hello, everyone. Thanks for joining us again in our last module of the day.
That's right.
This is a fun one, though. We're going to be taking a look at multiplayer and how we can get some, a little bit of multiplayer. Like, we're not going in depth and building, the lobbies and all the rest of the stuff. But we're going to take a look at what I refer to as a proof of concept, just to kind of give you an idea of how this can be done and kind of where you want to take it from here.
Yeah, it's the game functional side of things, just to replicate, the movement from one client to the other.
Mm-hmm. All right, so you want to take a look at the module overview for the day?
Exactly. So creating and configuring an Azure website, we're going to go through that today. And then building a server with Node.js, Express, and Socket.io.
Yeah.
And connecting to our player to our server, because otherwise...
That's kind of an important part.
Yeah, there's not going to be much gaming going on without that. And then, where we can go from there. What, now that you have this baseline and you can test things out and it seems to be working, what kind of, options do we have to mm-hmm. take that next step?
Awesome.
So those are the four things really we're going to cover in this module. Hopefully everything goes smoothly, and it's always dicey when
you start when you're starting to play on the internet live. It can be a little bit of an issue, so hopefully everything goes smoothly.
All right. If not,
we'll work around it. We'll be okay.
So first section, creating and configuring an Azure website.
Mm-hmm. So first off, our first step is to create the Azure website that we're going to use to host our game. Now, of course, like I said a little bit earlier, I mentioned that we could do the fact that, well, we could have an Azure instance. I could start up an instance of like a Linux server or a Windows server
right.
and build all of my my server code and build like an actual server to run on that instance.
Right.
But that seemed like a little bit of overkill for what I wanted to accomplish, especially because Azure websites can actually run a Node.js server for us and allow us to connect via WebSockets. So I thought to myself, well, this seems like it's probably our best solution, not causing a lot of overhead. So that's the way we decided to go about it. Again, there on the slide, if you don't have an Azure account, you can go ahead and sign up. That's something you're going to have to do before we can actually start building Azure websites.
Right.
So go ahead and sign that up. There's a free 1 month pass if you don't, if you're not quite sure if this is something you want to use, just go ahead and try it out for 1 month. And of course, you get $200 to spend on all Azure services when you sign up. So right off the bat, you get $200 worth of credits to spend in that month.
Right. So again, you're going to get that 1 month to mm-hmm. really play around with things and work with things. But you can still see what is available ahead of time, right, and plan out your game and what you're going to use and so on. Work, build everything, get the game up and running mm-hmm. like we've done to the point that it's at now so that, you're not in a rush to try to get your development of that done and then your development of your online services and hooking all that systems in and so on
yeah.
as well. So just something to keep in mind, especially when you're doing a simple little thing like this, you might as well spend the time developing it first, get it where it's going, and then really focus on just the part of hooking it up at this point.
Exactly. And that's basically the exact same way we handled it. We went and built the entire game and then we thought, well, let's add some multiplayer to it. So we went back and hooked in everything we needed. So basically we turned our already existing code base into the client. And then we rewrote, wrote our own server. So that's how we handled that situation.
Now, that's not the typical design process
no.
you want to do for a large, AAA multiplayer game or anything like that. That has definitely brought companies to their knees mm-hmm. for a few months at a time when they're stretching out into their first, large multiplayer game that they haven't done before. It takes a lot more planning, a lot more low-level integration in the engine in a lot of cases to optimize things and make sure the right things are being replicated across clients and servers and so on. But for the purposes of a smaller web game such as this and that, it's an okay process to do it in that order.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it's not something we're recommending globally for every game, obviously.
Obviously not, but...
But it's going to work for smaller web games and things like this that we're doing. All right, so I guess we should demo...
So I'm going to show them how to actually create an Azure website. So if we jump back over here to my screen, I'm already in the Azure website portal. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to create a new site. So I'm just going to go down here to the new button, and I'm going to select new. I'm going to go to website. I'm just going to go to quick create. Now, of course, there's a gallery in here, for things like WordPress sites and all that.
Right.
You can spin up all that stuff, but that's not what we need. We just need a simple website right now. So I'm going to go to quick create. I'm going to give it a URL, so I'm just going to say MVA demo, see if that is available. Yep, it's available. So I just go ahead and click create website. And that's going to go ahead and build up my website. So after a few minutes here, let Azure run kind of, it's going to go ahead and create the site. So there we go. Now here at the bottom, there's my site. So if I click on it now, this actually brings me to the site's dashboard. So the first thing that we need to do here is we need to configure a couple of little things, right? So the first one I'm going to do is I'm going to go to my dashboard. And the one thing that I want to do right off the bat is reset my deployment credentials. Because right now it's just set up, like I could download the publish profile and use it that way, but because you might want to FTP in here from another client or something like that, I just kind of reset my deployment credentials so I know what the username and password is.
Okay.
So if I click on this, it comes up and says, what do you want to use as your username? We'll leave it at Scruffy Fern. I'll punch in a password that I won't say out loud. And there we go. So that resets my deployment credentials. And that's going to let me log into the server. If I wanted to FTP into it or something like that, it would let me do that as well. Okay, after that, the next thing that we need to do is we need to configure it to allow us to have WebSockets.
Okay.
So what we're going to do is we're going to jump over to the Configure tab here. And if I scroll down, not too far down, you'll notice that there's a WebSockets here and it's turned off currently. So I'm going to go ahead and turn that on. And what that's going to do is allow us to actually have website or WebSockets connection on our website. So I click on, I'm just going to hit save. And of course, it's going to go ahead and update that for me. And when it's all done, I'm just going to dismiss that. And there we go. So that's pretty much the configuration. I know it's very simple. There's not a lot of steps there.
Right. So all the defaults were good.
All the defaults are good. We just want to make sure that we have our WebSockets turned on. Now what we want to do is we want to know basically where our FTP and everything is. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go down here. If I scroll down just a little ways on my dashboard, you'll notice that there's my FTP hostname.
Okay.
So I'm just going to copy and paste that, just kind of keep it on my clipboard, because we're going to need that eventually. Another thing that I want to notice right off the bat is what my username is. So my username for deployment is actually mva demo/scruffyfern. And you have to remember to put in the site name slash your username, otherwise it won't work. So just double check that you remember what your username is. So that's all we have to do on the Azure website. On the creation side of it. Excellent. So if we go back, bring up our slides there. I think, do we have any slides on the other thing, or do you want me to jump right into the code?
No, you already went through the, on the slides, we had the reset your deployment credentials.
Yeah.
You already went through that, and then grab the FTP hostname. So you covered everything there in terms of creating and configuring it, and you just
obviously
did that
part. Obviously, we just did that part, yes.
So next, would be building a server with Node.js.
Okay. So let's take a look at that. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to fire up Visual Studios here. I've already have it open.
And we need to install Node.js.
Node.js.
Tools.
Yeah. Do you want to bring the slide up just to show them all that?
Yep. First thing we got to do, install Node.js tools for Visual Studios. And you can download it right there.
Mm-hmm.
It has a slight quirk with it, though, right?
Yes.
You want to talk about that?
Yeah. So this one is one that I kind of found out by trial and error. So usually by default, when you create a project in Visual Studios, it kind of sticks it in your Visual Studio folder with inside of your documents.
Right.
But what happens is Node.js has a finite amount of characters that it can have in its
directory.
In its directory name. So if you have that, chances are you're going to run over those characters. Okay. So the easiest way to get around that, the safest bet, is just to put it in your C drive.
Or your base level of any drive.
Or your base level of any drive, right? Okay. And that way you're not going to have to worry about running
really
into
long
characters.
Names, yeah. Okay, that's good.
Yep.
And then open up Visual Studios, create a blank Node.js as your web application, which I assume is a new template or whatever.
Yeah, so now that you've installed those tools, what happens is it adds a template to Visual Studio that allows us to build a variety of Node.js-based websites.
And that can be found under the JavaScript category.
Exactly.
Node.js. All right. And then you right-click on npm, install npm package, and search for IO, which you're going to go through.
I'm going to go through all that for you guys.
So I'm just listing it off. Search for the socket IO, install that, and then search and install it.
Yeah, I wanted to make sure that we had the steps on the slides just in case, when you're following through, that you can get, because, this can be a little tricky. If things don't work the first time, it's good to have those steps laid out for you.
Okay, and then in terms of once we have that set up, we're going to create a few files. One's going to be our server.js that you talked about that we need.
I'm going to use a little TV magic and pull those in, but I'll walk you through it for
sure.
Okay,
and then on the other side, we got to sort of customize that player.js file to hold the player logic that sends the information to the server.
So yeah, so we have
becoming our client server.
Yeah, we have our player on our client side, but we need a player on the server side to handle and do all the manipulation of the player logic on the server side.
Okay,
of
so that player JS file is now going to be on the server side.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll have a server JS that will hold all of our server logic, which basically just kind of ties everything together, and then we'll have a player JS. And the reason, again, I separated this because I've learned my lesson.
Good, good.
Right? I want to make sure that things are easy to read and extendable, so this way, you know, if you had an enemy class that you wanted to put into the cloud, you could do so as well.
And then the last thing in there is going to be enabling the WebSockets mm-hmm. so that we can now communicate.
Yeah, it seems a little counterintuitive, but when we get to that, I'll explain it a little bit more.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and jump into the demo then.
Sounds good.
For building and publishing that server.
I'm sitting here in Visual Studio. The first thing I did, now I've already installed the tools. I went ahead and did that through TV Magic. Didn't want to make you guys wait on that. So I'm going to create a new project. So I'm going to go new project, and of course I've got basic open for some reason. You'll notice I have JavaScript here, and if I drop down my JavaScript, I now have a new section called Node.js.
Excellent. Okay.
So if I grab that, you'll notice there's a pile of different things you can do in here. The one that we're interested in is we want a blank Azure Node.js web application.
Now that Node.js category is going to be totally missing if you hadn't installed things right.
Exactly.
Okay.
Right.
So that's effectively our verification check.
Yes, exactly. So if you don't have that and you're trying to do this, you won't see that at all.
Okay.
Now, we did say we're using Express.
Yes.
But we're not going to actually use the Express template because it stubs in a bunch of extra stuff that we don't really need. So we're just going to like not worry about that. We'll just do a basic Azure Node.js web application. And then from there, we'll add everything that we need. So again, like I said, I'm going to select that one there. But I'm going to change my location.
Right.
I'm going to browse, and I'm just going to put it directly on my C drive, like the base root of my folder. That way I don't have to worry about that. And we can just call it, that's fine. I'll just leave Node.js web app 1, that's fine. So I go ahead and click OK on that, and it's gonna go ahead and create my website for me, or my project for me, I should say.
It'd be awesome if it just created
it
a
would
website.
Wouldn't that be awesome? It's just like, done.
Just had
no
to
worries.
Think about it while it was processing.
Exactly. And so it's got this little stubbed in code here. So if you ran this, it would actually fire up a server.
Okay.
And then if you went to the website, you would see Hello World on the screen.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so that's just like the code, and basically just shows a little neat little thing there. We're not going to have to worry about that because we're going to do our own. So the first thing we need to do in here now, like we said on the slides, is we need to start installing our packages, our Node.js packages. And that's how we do this is through the NPM manager. So you notice over here on the side I have NPM.
Okay.
I'm just going to right-click on that. Sorry. And I'm going to go to install new packages.
Okay, yep.
And that's going to bring up our little dialog here.
And this is where we're going to find the socket.io.
Yeah, we're going to find our socket.io, and we're going to find our Express in here. This might take a second or two just because it's got to download the packages.
Oh, I can see it counting away there in your output window, 5 megs, 6 megs. Yep.
Okay. Hopefully it's not too big. The internet's pretty quick here.
Meg a second, that's not bad.
That's not too bad.
Progress, progress.
So yeah, anyway, let's talk a little bit about why we are only calling this a proof of concept while we're waiting on this to download.
Okay.
So the reason we're only calling it a proof of concept is because, like I said, we're not going to be having the lobby system. We're not even going to be having like what people refer to as netcode.
Right.
We're not going to have the ability to check for lag, to have predetermined like movement, right? So when you're doing this kind of stuff and you're working over a high latency network like the internet, you have to worry about packets not getting to the place in time, stuff like that, which causes that lag effect, that juddering effect that you see other players moving around, right?
Right.
So there's ways to mitigate that, right? You could write code that would basically check to see what direction that player was heading in and basically just kind of guess at where they're going to be heading. And that way you can kind of give the impression that the internet's running faster than it really is, right?
Right, that's right.
Yeah. Are there ways that you've experienced in the past?
Yeah, there's predictive methods as well versus there's ones basically where you can get the client to guess what you're going to do versus the other ones where you send it mm-hmm. and it verifies it and then returns to you, hey, that's what happened, and then you autocorrect for any mistakes. For example, in a lot of first-person shooters, you can shoot at a target and hit it mm-hmm. on your screen, but then you die and nothing happens to the bad guy, even though you saw, you know, stuff splatter all over or whatever. And that's because in those systems, you've shot, your client registers that you shot, but you don't know that your character has lost all his health and he's died yet, maybe because there's lag coming to you, but mm-hmm. or by the time your packet does get to the server, just during that travel time, the server has registered, oh, you've been shot too much from somebody else, and it will now ignore that packet. So there's different ways to handle those kinds of high latency situations. Mm-hmm. Again, different genres have different issues or different things to watch out for in terms of what you need to worry about. It's a racing game, you need to worry about where the vehicles are at all times, because that's sort of critical for any kind of clipping or hitting that you do between the cars. In a shooter game, there's even more higher, you know, flying bullets going at even higher speeds that, you know, you gotta counter. They do prediction systems usually for mm-hmm. that instead.
Exactly, and those are really advanced techniques, and those are things that we, honestly, we don't have the time to go through today, because that would be, its own little course on itself. Right. But we wanted to show you just a kind of proof of concept. But of course, you're going to have to take this and extend it if you want it to be production ready.
Right.
Okay, so we can go back into Visual Studio. Thankfully, the internet was quick enough that it got everything for us. So like I said, the first thing we want to install is our socket IO. So I'm just going to search for socket IO. And there we go. So right off the top right there, you'll see socket.io, Node.js, real-time framework server, and I'm just going to install the latest. I'm not going to change any settings here. I can just click install package. And it's going to go out on the net. It's going to download my package and just do all the prep stuff. You can kind of see it in the output there at the bottom, everything it's doing. And there you notice no command completed, code exit, no errors. Good to go.
Perfect.
So socket.io is now installed, and you'll notice over here in my...
Right, I saw it pop in
you
there.
Saw it pop open. So there we go. Our package is all installed. Now, we're going to use Express. And the reason we're using Express is because we want to be able to bind to port 80. And by default, socket.io and Node.js on its own isn't going to allow us to do that with Azure. So we'll just add that extra layer of using Express to be able to bind to port 80 nicely for us.
Okay.
So again, just going to use the standard versions, not going to change anything. And I just go ahead and install. And it'll go out and it'll do all that. And again.
So that's a relatively painless process. I mean,
yeah, it's not too difficult, right? Like, you don't have to go through all the setup yourself and all that. It does everything for you.
You just have to know what you're
looking for. You just need to know what you're looking for. And of course, there's you know, thousands upon thousands of different packages out there for Node.js that you can play around with and test out. Awesome. So that's the setup part for our server. So now what we're going to do is we're actually going to bring in our files.
Okay.
Right? So again, like I said, through the joys of TV magic, I'm just going to go ahead and bring them in and just kind of walk through what they are. So add existing, and I'm going to go to my desktop because I believe that's where I stuck them. I'm just going to click add. And it's going to say, hey, you already got a server. Yeah, I'm going to overwrite it. No big deal.
So again, these aren't steps anybody else really has to do. It's just
no.
If they were creating,
if you were creating it from yeah, right. So here we go. So I'm going to start off with my server.js file. And what I'm doing here right off the bat is I'm checking for my requirements, right? So I'm saying I'm going to need my utility requirement, and then I'm going to look for Express, make sure I have that. I'm going to require my player class,
okay?
Because we're going to need that, and then I'm going to set up my app. So I create an app using Express. These are all things that are internal to Express. I'm not going to dive too deep in them. If you want to take a look at it, check out the Express website. It'll explain in detail why you're doing it in this order and stuff. But basically, we're just going to create the app. We're going to create our server, and we're going to bind that to the app. So we pass app in there, you see at the end of server.
Yep.
Just there at the end of the line. And then what we do is we set up our I/O. So we say, okay, our I/O is going to require our socket, and we're going to pass in server so that it knows about Express.
And for those that don't know I/O or it's using different language, input-output is basically the short form there.
Mm-hmm. And then we just say what port we want to bind it to. So this line here basically says whatever port is available in our environment or port 80.
Or port 80, okay.
Right, so by default, it should go to port 80 for
us. And why port 80?
Port 80 is the default HTTP port on the web.
Okay, so it's the one all my web web pages basically get served.
Exactly, right? So that it makes it easy for us to connect to. We don't have to do anything worrying about making sure that we're routing it to the right port and stuff like that. So we just set it to 80 and save ourselves a little bit of trouble.
Now, sometimes I have to open up ports on my firewall for certain games, and that's basically they're using other ports.
Exactly, okay. Right? So I'm just going to go down here. Of course, we have our player for our variable for our players. So this is going to be an array that's going to hold all the players that are going to be playing on the server. So this might be myself, this might be you if you connect, right? So anybody that connects is going to be saved there. And then what we're going to do is we're going to set up our event handlers. So we call set event handlers, if I just kind of scroll down here, and we set up all of our socket first, right? So the first thing we want to do in our set event handlers is say, set up our sockets.
Okay.
Right? So this is what's going to do the actual physical connection from your computer to my computer and pass the, all the data we want along that socket.
Okay.
Right? So we do the socket and we say on connection, we pass in the event that we want to fire. So this is going to say every time that someone connects, I want to fire off this event, the on socket connection. So then if I scroll down here a little bit, you'll see our on socket connection. And this is where I've actually used this to do all the setup for my other event handlers. So I'm kind of like chaining them. So that way I know that none of my other ones are going to be created until someone connects.
An event handler system, that's a typical like software practice again, right? A software development practice where you have something listening for a predefined action, and then when that action fires off, go and run some procedure or function over here.
And you've already seen it in our original project because we were using event handlers to check to see when a new frame was kicking off and stuff like that. So this is basically the same thing. It's like our on-enter frame.
Okay.
So I'm just going to take a look at these ones really quick. So our on player disconnect. So we say, first we're going to pass out a quick log. It's always nice to log stuff on your server so you can see what's going on. So when you're actually, if you wanted to, you could connect into Azure and take a look at the command prompt inside of Azure or console, if you will, inside of Azure. And it'll actually display this like, oh, a player's connected, and it'll tell you their ID.
Right.
So every player, and you'll see this when we go into the client side, every player has an ID. So we can use that ID to keep track of who's who, right? So if the player is disconnected in this case, we're going to find the player that we want, right? So player by ID, which is a helper function, we'll take a look at the end. But we're going to say that's the player we want to remove, and we grab his ID, right? If the player is not found, we're just going to print out, hey, that player doesn't exist, and then just return out of the function.
Perfect.
Right? Now, if we do find the player, we're going to use the splice function, which is going to remove a certain object from our array.
Right.
Right. And in order to do that, we're saying we're going to remove it from players at the index of whatever the player was.
Right. So index of goes finds the matching player inside there, and then we start removing from that point.
Yeah.
And we only need one to be removed.
That's the second parameter in there is one, which says only remove that one object.
Right.
Right. Now, if you wanted to remove a bunch of players that started as, you could actually do that, but.
So everybody that connected after Jim,
kick
them all out. All right.
And then what we need to do is we need to tell the other players, hey, someone just disconnected. Okay. Right. So we, at the very end, we say broadcast, and that's the term that we use to send data to everyone.
Or a message. A message,
yeah. So we send this message to everyone, hey, remove this player, and then we pass his ID.
Okay.
Right? So that way, everybody else that's connected to the game knows, hey, Jim just left.
And then basically, they do a similar process, go and splice
internally,
out that
exactly.
player out of their array. Okay.
And we'll see that on the other side. So when a new player connects, this is a little bit different. So we say, okay, we're going to create a new player, right? We're going to give his ID, and then we're going to set where he is in the world.
Oh, okay.
Right. It's very simple because
his actual location.
His actual location, right? And then we're just doing a printout here to tell us where he's being centered so that we can keep an eye on that, right? Like I said, it's always nice to kind of have a little debug log going on your server so you can keep track of these things as it's running.
That way when people start cheating or hacking, you can, look for those patterns, right?
Exactly.
Okay.
All right. And so we have a new player connected, so we need to tell everybody, right? Tell the other players, "Hey, there's a new person joined. Hey, Jim's here. Here's his ID." And here's where he's located in the world.
Right.
Right. So we broadcast that out to everybody.
And so when I receive that message, that's when the game's going to replicate him and show him on my screen.
Exactly. All right. Now, we need, because everybody else knows about us, but we don't know about them, so what we need to do is check how many existing players are on here. So we step through, we get all of our, from our players array, we get all of our existing players.
Right.
And then we say to the new player, hey, here's all these new, or here's all the people that are already connected to the server.
Right.
And here's where they're located.
So basically Jim joins and now Jim gets to know about everybody else that's in the game.
Exactly.
Okay.
And then of course at the end we push that new player into our player array so that we can keep track of this new player that we've created.
Okay.
So that's the player creation in a nutshell. All right. So our move player, again, we're going to this is an event handler that fires off if someone moves. So we say, okay, we need to know what player is moving.
So at this point then, this is sort of the way if I wanted to do other actions in the
yes,
future, or
exactly.
like the player spawns an evil creature or something with a mm-hmm. spell, then this would be a similar process that I'm going to be setting up for those kinds of actions. I'm going to make a function and as a function on the server that's going to get fired off when I hear about that command from the client's side.
Exactly.
Okay.
So we have, so right here we're saying move player. We're going to get that player by his ID using that event, that little function helper at the bottom of this file. And then what we do is we say, okay, if he's not found, let us know about it. We return out. If he is found, we get his input data, so we know like what direction he was moving in.
Okay.
And then we get his new X and Y.
Right.
Right, so that we know, hey, he's moving in this direction, and this is where he's going to be.
So that'll basically allow us to update everybody else's image so that they're facing the right direction and in the right spot.
Exactly.
Okay.
And then, of course, we need to tell everybody else on the server that this happened. So we rebroadcast it out, hey, the player's moved, this is his input, and this is his ID.
Okay.
Very simple, but it's what we need. And, of course, at the very end, we have our player find function, which basically just goes through our array and looks for the player with that ID and then returns that player.
Excellent.
Very, very simple, but necessary in order to find the right ID. And then at the very bottom, we just run our init that basically gets the ball rolling, you know, unleashes the hounds, if you will.
And so gets, that's our entire server class.
That's our entire server class. I know there's not a lot of code there, but it's doing a lot of interesting stuff behind the scenes.
Right.
So now we'll jump over into our player class and take a look at what's there.
Again, this is the player on the
player
server
on the
side.
Server side.
Okay.
Exactly. So our player, we start off, we give him a couple of variables. We need to know his placement in the world, so we get his X and his Y. Mm-hmm. Now if this was a 3D game, there would be a Z in there as well.
Okay.
But this is only 2D, so we only need to know his X and Y. We need his input, right? And we need his ID. So we're basically, this is what we're giving all this class, right? So that we can set those things.
Right.
And then we just have getters and setters that allow us to return his X and Y, set his X and Y, get his input, set his input, and then we just allow a return.
Right.
So a very, very simple class.
It's really just a data structure.
It's just a data structure so that we know how to store all this information when it gets passed to us.
So a simple object, no real extreme functionality. Mm-hmm.
And if you wanted to have an enemy, you would do a similar thing with an enemy class,
right,
or whatever it is that you were trying to add to your server.
So any information on the server side, I can build a similar structure to, mm-hmm. to store that data, so it can keep track and be sort of the authority and know where it is, so that when somebody, say, interacts with that enemy and destroys it, by attacking or whatever, the server will say, okay, yeah, he's destroyed, and then he'll broadcast that message, hey, just so you know, this enemy's at zero, you know, play the fall down effect or whatever you want.
Awesome. Yeah, that's exactly what we're doing
okay.
there. Okay, so that's all the code that we really need in mm-hmm. order to get this going. There's one more step that we need to do before we actually push our
Right, you mentioned that one last step. We got to make sure we enable the WebSocket, right?
Yeah, and actually, no, we're actually disabling the WebSocket.
Oh, sorry. Yes.
Yeah, so we're making it set to false. And now that seems kind of counterintuitive, but what we're doing is we're setting the WebSockets, the Azure version of the WebSocket, we're turning it off.
Right.
And we're only going to use the Node.js version of the socket.
Okay.
Okay, so that's why we're doing this. We're turning off the default version that comes built in so that we can use our version
okay.
of socket.io.
So how do we do that?
So we're going to go into our web.config.
Web.config.
We're just going to open this up. And right in my body tag, if I can scroll down a little bit. Oh, I think I went too far. Yeah. Right in here, there we go. I'm just going to add a line that says WebSocket enabled equals false. Oh, it didn't like my other. There we go. No, slash and close that out. And that line of code will just disable our WebSocket.
Right, the default WebSocket.
The default WebSocket that's already in, and then allow us to use our Node.js-based one.
Excellent. So now we can publish.
Yes, now we're onto our publish.
All right.
So we're going to go up to Node.js, right up here, the Node.js web app one, whatever you've called your project.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to right-click on it, and I'm going to go down to Publish.
Oh, well, that's easy.
Pretty simple.
I thought you were going to show me some really hard coders.
I know, isn't it crazy? It's so difficult. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to pick my publish target, and, well, Microsoft Azure website is what I'm trying to target here, so I'm going to select that. And it's going to say, hey, you want to sign in? So I'm just going to go ahead and sign in. Oop. Helps if you spell things right. And it's just going to ask me for my password. And now it's going to actually go ahead and sign me in. So what's really cool here is all I have to do is drop down, and I can actually look for that website that I created.
Right.
And in my case, it was called MVA Demo. So I select that, and I click OK. It's going to download my already existing publishing settings, so I don't need, like, you know that stuff that I showed you?
Yep.
You don't necessarily need to do that, but a lot of us like to be able to add things to the server and pull things down without having to do that. So I showed you the way to reset these, but it's actually pulling in all that information for us by default.
Okay.
Right? Which is really, really cool. You can validate the connection to make sure it works or whatever. And then, of course, at the end, just click Publish. And shortly thereafter, you'll notice in my output file, I'll start actually pushing this up to the website. And that's it. You now have a server running up in Azure.
Excellent.
Not too difficult at all.
No, that wasn't too hard. So then next, of course, is going to be that we need to connect our player.
Yeah, we
got to
do the client side stuff.
Okay. So let's take a look at really what's going to be required in that action. And so our player needs to connect now to our server, but through the use of Socket.io.
Yeah.
Right, to create a web socket that's going to give us the connection we need to get over to the one you just set up effectively on the other side. So our first step is going to be to add the reference to the Socket.io in our index.html, where we set up all our connections to other files and so on. And then we're going to download the Socket.io library from the web, because we're going to need that. We need to initialize our socket within the game itself, because connecting to it is one thing, but
we got to actually initialize and set everything up. Yep.
And then use event listeners to catch all of the events again that are going to happen between the client and the server.
And you'll see those are going to match up to the ones that we created on the server.
Right. Okay. So, what event listeners do we need? Well, you went through connect and disconnect, right? You went through new player and then moving player.
Yeah.
Now, we could add more.
Oh, yeah. We could have added cast, spell, whatever it might have been.
Maybe we get a chat system put in here, right? So you could have send message, receive message as two other events that we need. And then finally, we need to modify our game to have multiple players instead of one so that we can see them running around and interacting with each other or whatever in that way. So how about a demo of modifying our game?
Yeah, let's take a look at what the actual code is to modify our game into being a client.
All right, and I'm going to actually do that on my system here, so I can just tab right over. So what should we look at first, I guess? Should we look at the socket setup as well? I guess that'll be the first thing we're going to look at. So index.html is what I mentioned we needed. So here we have put a little comment in just so you know which line I'm looking at. So right here is script source equals HTML5 multiplayer backup server dot Azure website.
And that was the one that we've already created.
Exactly.
In this case, with our little demo, I would have changed that to MVA demo.
Right.
Or whatever you decided to call your website.
So that's the part that you need to update to
whatever you chose
to call it. That's right. So the rest, Azure websites, .NET, that'll be the same, right? Mm-hmm. Port 80 will be the same and so on.
Exactly.
And then we do our, Socket.io through Socket.io.js, and we can close our script at that point.
And it's actually a good point, just because we're talking about this, I'm going to mention. So when you actually go and download our content from GitHub, you'll see that there's a folder called with multiplayer.
Right.
And this is where we're going to have a little bit of the change, because I wanted to keep them separate just in case you didn't want to have the multiplayer or, there's something else.
So there's
because
this
is a proof of concept, right? And I don't really want to attach it to the default. So you'll notice in there that there is no server project, so you'll have to actually do the project build the way we did, but we'll include the server and player JS file for you.
Perfect. All right, so yeah, remember to update this if you are doing multiplayer. If you're doing single player, well, then you don't have to worry about that.
Exactly.
Okay. So that's how we, you know, we are getting that ready, basically including that JS file, and we still need to actually make the socket ourselves. So I've already gone and searched for socket, and I just got to find it down here again. All right, so here is in our game.setSocket function, we've added the ability for creating a variable, a socket, and we're going to do our IO connect. And again, where we're connecting is whatever you decided. So you would change that to be whatever your website's name is, and the rest is the same, probably. And then we have our socket, so we're going to assign that socket to the game object, so we have it to be able to call other things in the future that are going to happen. So again, here we're going to start listening for our events. Now that we have a socket, it's created and ready to go, we're going to set up, you know, the function we want to call when somebody connects, or we hear somebody connects along that socket. When we hear that somebody disconnects, you know, call this function. New player, move player, remove player, all these functions that we're going to create on this side of things
is what we did on the server side. Right. We just need to do it on the client now.
Exactly. So that's, you know, the socket event set up there that we're doing. And that's it. That's really all the extra in terms of the set socket function that we're dealing with on our side, on the client side, we'll say, in the game.js folder. Now, what if, you know, I want to send something? That's where we have sort of our emit function.
Yeah, and you'll notice here we don't have broadcast, we have emit, because we're only sending this to the server. We're not broadcasting this to everybody.
Right.
We're broadcasting this to the server, and then the server's going to take that code and then broadcast it out to everyone else.
Okay, so there's our emit effectively, and in this case it's emitting that we are not moving, but it's still emitting. And down here where player movement X or Y is true, one of the other is true, we should have to insert yet another emit to tell the server that we are in fact moving and send our X and Y position. So there you can see I'm sending as part of this message, X is now going to be set to player X, Y should be set to player Y, and away it goes. Okay, so these are internally the message sort of properties, and then on this side, the variable that I'm passing as that property. So it looks like we're just repeating the same thing twice here, but actually one is an internal JavaScript game variable that we're using, and then the other is going to be on the other side.
Yeah, both sides need to know about the ID, right, in order to keep track. So if you jump over to the game JS, we can take a look at the actual implementation of the event handlers.
Oh, yes. So let's just go. I guess I was just... Oh, jump. There we go. So I can just search for, let's start with connected. That seems to make sense as a good place to start. So here's our on socket connected. So again, you know, logging things on the client side while you're testing stuff is a good idea, just as it was on the server side.
Exactly.
So we'll print out to the console log just that, you know, connected to the socket server, that's been initiated, and hopefully this works. So what do we need to do? Well, we need to emit that new player message and give it the starting position that we would like for where, you know, we are currently according to the game. So we use localplayer.getX, localplayer.getY, and away we go. And that's it. So it's the same socket emit, it's just now, you know, sending a message of where the new player is. In terms of on disconnect, we don't really have to do much.
No.
Okay, so we're just printing out basically that you've been disconnected from the server in this case, and that's the end.
And that's it, yeah. It's the over. Server will handle the rest.
Right. And then we have on new player. So new player is connected, and it's going to show us our ID in the console log. And now we have to go about setting up basically that new player. So we're going to create the player object and take the ID from the data, from the message we were sent, and stick it in that new player that we've created. We also need to set up his initial position. Okay, we can initialize the player too, so he has all the basic stats or whatever he's supposed to have. So we can send that in. And the X and Y of the player that we want the new player to set. And again, that data comes from the message. So we're grabbing out data.x and data.y and setting the new player to that position. Finally, we have to, of course, take that object and add it to the stage as a child. And what are we doing here? Do you want to describe
because this new player, you're thinking to yourself, new player, does that mean me? No.
Right.
That new player means someone else
okay.
that's connected. So we're creating a new player internally on our side, And then what we're doing is we're going to we have this remote players array that we're holding all the information of all the other players. So we just say, okay, this new player that we've created and added to the stage, push it to that array so that I can keep track of them.
Right. So effectively, we have us,
yeah,
and then we have all of them in the remote players
exactly
array. Okay. Cool. And then I don't have to go very far because here is the onMove player function. Yep. And again, it's receiving whatever data the message sent us. And we want to know, well, who was it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we got to get player by ID. So we're going to have a similar function to the helper function the server had that takes in an ID
and
from the message.
And it's the exact same one we just added to the bottom of this.
Exact, except for it's going through the remote player players. Array instead of the players array, I think it was called on the server side. So just
exactly.
A minor
change.
Yeah. So now we know which player. And that's our move player. And as you know, if we don't find that move player, we should say player not found, so we know that there's an error or something like that when we're testing, and we go ahead and leave the function. Otherwise, you know, there must be a player if that's not false. So we go ahead and set the input from the data, so which way, what was the command that got sent to us. And if we have we take the positional data and we go ahead and set it because that's part of the message.
Mm-hmm.
At some point, you know, the input may have been that he attacked.
Yeah.
Or that he casted a spell or dropped an item, right? So then this data, you know, won't update in terms of his position, but it's still part of the message, so we're going mm-hmm. ahead and setting it. So again, that's up to you. When you extend it, you may have to do something else in this area. But then again, why would you send a move player command?
If you're going to make a new function that does this.
Right. So for now, this is really all we need to know about move player is a position and which way you're facing usually mm-hmm. through that input. Some people will go in here and be like, oh, well, I'll just add the extra stuff. Well, no, this message really should just be the response to a move player message. You should make a separate command that sends to and from the server when the player does some other attack or whatever
exactly.
and handle it separately. So you don't have that extra data. And then on remove player, we have to do that same kind of thing. First, we have to verify that the player does exist or that we do know about him. So we do player by ID. Okay, and then if he's not found, we just say, hey, don't worry about it. I didn't even know about him. I don't have to remove him. Otherwise, we do remove that player from the stage using remove child, and then we got to splice him out again, depending on where his position was within our remote players array. And we only want to delete him. Mm-hmm. Not everybody. So
exactly.
we specify, you know, remove one thing starting at this position. Okay?
Yeah, and then right below that's your player helper function.
Right, here's the player helper find function. And again, really the only difference is it says remote players here versus players like it did on the server side.
Exactly. And that's it. That's all the code you really need to connect the two of them.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Went too far. Whoop, whoop. There we go. So that's modifying our game client. And, you know, checking out our multiplayer prototype now would be a good idea.
Yeah, so let's actually see it running.
Okay.
So what we're going to do is and the reason we're going to show it to you in the web browser is because this is a proof of concept,
yep.
We don't want to worry about too much about the Cordova side of things because every different platform handles WebSockets differently.
Sure, that's
right.
True,
yep. So what we're doing is we're just going to, and because we said this is cross-map platform and we're able to just run it on a website if we wanted to, we're going to show you what it looks like running on a website, running on the web, basically.
Sure. And, I mean, you can still access the web from most cell phones anyway, so... I mean, it's not...
Yes, it's not much different. Yeah. It's just that there's a couple of extra things that you need to do with WebSockets for each different platform, and a little bit too much for a proof of concept for our liking.
We're already running short on time.
Exactly.
Anyways. Okay, so let's jump in then. You've already got yours fired up, and
yep.
I'll switch mine to look at mine, too. There we go. So we're showing your screen there.
Yep, so I'm the bottom guy there moving around. And there's
up
Brian
top.
Up top.
I'll go talk over here. Actually, I'm going to go get this quest from this guy. So, I mean, you can see that it's replicating the information. No, it's my quest. I want to accept first. There we go. Accept quest. There we go. Woohoo. And then now I have to fight the giant rat and so on. And
I'll just wait to see if he dies and then go in and clean up his
No,
mess.
I just ran away, so it's all yours. by all means, you go ahead. You go do that one. I'll just
Okay, I'll
here.
Wander over here and have a chat with him.
So now you got to switch back over to... Because you can't see the quest on my side because I'm not doing it. But
no.
If we go over to your side, you are in the middle of the fight. I just see you standing by him, talking to him. I don't know what you're doing. That's right.
Yay, I defeated him. Yeah. I got all the money.
So now, good job. If you check my screen, though, you'll notice that he's the same guy,
mm-hmm.
right? It Now, why is that?
Because you didn't complete the quest. Only right. I did. So I only know about the quest being finished.
And then on top of that, if you didn't want it that way, say you only wanted Mickey to be able to complete the quest, and then now I don't have that option, but I could complete the next one where the old man gets upset maybe, or mm-hmm. at least when I talk to him, the old man's like, no, I got to go talk to that guy. He's the one that killed my friend, my little rat. So what will happen is we didn't replicate that change.
No.
Right? There's no message to say that this state got updated.
Exactly. We're only passing around movement. We're not passing around anything else.
Right. So, I mean, we see the movement replicated at this moment, but that NPC switch has not been replicated. So we would have to add that, mm-hmm. just like we did the other commands, to let all of the clients know. We would broadcast out, oh, Mickey has completed this quest. So the old guy's mad at Mickey, and, you know, you should now show the old guy instead of the original young guy that's being chased by the rat.
Exactly.
Okay.
So we left a little bit of room for you guys to go ahead and kind of expand it and do a lot more with it, which actually brings us to our next point. Where can we take this?
Exactly. Whoops. And I just hit the wrong button. There we go. I exited the PowerPoint by accident. There we go. So where to go from here? Mm-hmm. That's what we want to look at next. And, you know, add more functionality.
Yep.
To not only the battle system and everything else, but actually in the multiplayer, like you said, propagate more commands so that both sides see what's going on in the way that you want and work with all that kind of stuff. In terms of game functionality, mm-hmm. we could do a player versus player battle system. We have more than one player running around on the screen now,
right? We basically have everything there to do it. Now we just need to connect it to our server to pass that data, like you were saying, around so that everybody knows what's going on.
Right. So I would make initiate attack command whenever I'm standing beside a player. Whoever I'm looking at, when I push A, you know, it would say, hey, so-and-so wants to fight you. And then he'd get a little... look like the battle system, right? Mm-hmm. Pop up, I'd see you, and I'm down here at the bottom, and you're just like, hey, come here and fight. And I could pick flee and run away, or I could cast a magic spell or attack you back and start off the fight. But we need to know that you initiated the fight, and then I would pick one of my options, and that would be sent back as a new message to you specifically, but not broadcasted in that case
to everyone. Exactly.
Right?
So that's slightly different than what we're doing now, where we're saying every data that comes in, the server then broadcasts to everybody. In that case, you're only going to want to broadcast to that one person.
Right. But what you might want to broadcast to everybody is the fact that we are fighting. Mm-hmm. So you could send a message, say, that displays a little, you know, one of those animated cartoon clouds where you just see hands coming in and out and feet sticking out in funny angles, right? You could send a message to everyone else that, you know, replace those two actors like we did with the other replace command on the quest side to mm-hmm. switch the old man with the new man, but now it's replace these two players with that funny little cloud animation or sprite instead.
Exactly.
And then when the battle ends, maybe because I run away out of it, you just replace that back with two people. So you need to send a command either to everybody or specific players in the exact same way we've done here with the single send or the multiple send, of just those kinds of messages that you then handle on the client side to show a different image or show or cause an attack or do damage and so on back and forth.
Yeah,
so, I mean, a player versus player battle system is absolutely possible right now at that point. You just need to start writing in all those commands and all those responses.
Exactly.
Trade system.
Which would be really fun to have.
Well, I mean, once you had the player versus player battle system, a trade system's sort of a simpler version of that, because still I walk up to a player and I hit A to initiate a trade, or whatever, or B, whatever you want it to be to initiate a trade. I have to let him know, and then we start picking items and sending them back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be it for a trade system. And a chat system, again, you need to make a little chat prompt, and that one's going to have a little bit more work
to it, yeah.
Because we haven't shown you how to like put input so you could type and pull up the little keyboard. And if you're on multiple platforms across the mobile devices, right, you might have different
changes.
There's
different things to do there, yeah. Cordova does alleviate some of that stress, though, by giving you the ability to do
that. That's true. So again, that'd be something you'd want to harness.
That's
from
a little
Cordova.
Bit more advanced, yeah.
So there's three ways you could, you know, step up what we just did in that multiplayer demo and build them up and you know, until you get comfortable with sort of doing all of that.
Mm-hmm.
What about extending the system into lobbies? What do you recommend there?
Well, so yeah, like basically what we have now is just everybody just joins one single server, right?
Right.
And so if
5,000 people playing in one game?
Yeah, you know, in this little space, it's not going to work out too well. So what you might want to do is have multiple servers, right? And then give the players the ability to connect to a single server. So right. maybe that's via the website, so they know what website they want to connect to, or what server or IP, whatever it might be. You could even have like a box that pops up and lists all the active servers and the amount of players that are on it. Now that's a little bit more advanced. There's a lot that you have to do there, right? To create what that's referred to as a lobby, right?
Right.
And then you're allowing your players to pick where they're going to go and where they're connect. Maybe it's by geographical location, right? To keep lag down and stuff like that.
Yeah, you could do an automatic join system. If you didn't want to do sort of that web server, mm-hmm. you could do geolocation to find the closest other person playing and then just drop them in that game instead if you wanted to do that way. Yeah. Cuts down on all the management of all the servers and having to pick which one your buddy's in or whatever, or setting up a name for your game when you launch it, right? You'd have to add that kind of functionality so people knew mm-hmm. what server they're looking for, and then we wouldn't have that problem. We could also go into co-op or PvP quests, maybe, right? I initiate a quest, and if you're in my game world, we're always considered a party mm-hmm. instead, right? So that alleviates the worry of the management of, oh, this guy got the quest, but you know, not this guy. Or the old man's angry at the one that killed the rat, but not the other four players, or that new player that just showed up. It'd be funny to go and kill the rat, and then when somebody shows up, leave, so the old man's just mad at him, and he's just like, hey, what's this quest? Oh, and then gets attacked by the old man for no reason, right? By making them all just co-op and PvP, or co-op battles for everybody, and quests for everybody, then you wouldn't have to do any of that kind of management or tracking of who triggered what.
Exactly.
Right? And then again, PvP battles and quests at a larger scale, you could do that. User designed quests and battles, that could be interesting.
That would be kind of interesting. So if you built the system where, you know, we have that quest data, right? You could actually build that out to some sort of editor, if you will, right? And then you could actually have this, and people could go and edit their own, and then push them up to the server, and the server could add them to all the players as quests.
Perfect. And then other multiplayer modes. I mean, you could do a little spin-off game where you met a couple friends and you've all leveled up your characters and you have magic abilities and all this inventory. You could all jump into an arena mode or a holdout mode maybe or something like that where waves of rats, you know, from that old man who, you know, you beat off and he left after a while, but he comes back with all his new friend rats, mm-hmm. Pet rats, and they just come in waves and waves and waves until you can't hold out anymore.
Yeah.
You could do all kinds of
there's lots of
multiplayer
fun stuff
modes.
You could
capture the flag. I mean, a little RPG capture the flag. That'd be pretty funny, running around in your little isometric 2D animation view, you know, chasing each other with flags, something like that. There's lots of modes that you could put in relatively easy.
Yeah, there's a lot you can do with this. Like we said, we're starting out on the ground floor. There's lots of room to grow. But like we said, we wanted to give you a simple proof of concept and show you how to get this started. Because, you know, like a lot of people think multiplayer is this really giant thing that's hard to do. But when you're doing little things like this, it's not too difficult.
There's a lot of ways to design a simple system that will work directly for just your needs. Mm-hmm. And then you just go with that. You don't need the huge back end and architecture, especially since Azure really takes care of that.
All that for us.
Back end and architecture. They can support you for however many players you need. They can build it up to whatever you need.
Well, because that's the good thing about Azure. It scales with you, right? So if I have, like, all of a sudden just, you know, my game becomes popular and a million people join, Azure will actually help me by scaling. Right. In that case, you might not be wanting to run it on an Azure website.
Well,
that you might want to take to it.
But the overall cloud system
is built to do all that for us. That's the beautiful thing of Azure. It kind of like takes all that heavy behind the scenes stuff, right? Because we're game developers. We don't want to worry about server architecture. That's not what we're here for. We want fun stuff.
Or the business side of things. Yeah. I just want to make the game and play the game.
Exactly.
I mean, somebody else can handle that. So wrapping it all up today.
Yeah, so it's that time of the day. We've
got a couple more resources for everybody to use. There's the HTML5GameDevelopment.com website there.
Great website for you know, getting up to date news, tutorials, demos. I've checked it out in the past. You know, if I'm looking for a certain thing and I want to see a tutorial, I've used that site in the past. Right.
And then, of course, if you get stuck or there's, you know, a good story about one of your games or some tips you want to roll out to other people, there's HTML5GameDevs.com, which is a forum site for
very
HTML5
community.
Game Dev.
Very nice people, willing to help out and answer a lot of the questions that you might have.
And there's a book out, right, since we are using Enchant.
Yes, this is a great book that's built on how to use Enchant to build not just a 2D game, but actually at the end of the game, they show you how to build a 3D game using Enchant.
Oh, okay, so the engine even scales
it
beyond.
It scales on, yeah, okay. Definitely.
So that's great.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what did we cover today?
Well, we started out, we covered a lot of stuff. We covered the new tools for Apache Cordova and all the things you can do with that and the cross-platform development that allows you to do, being able to test and deploy and seeing how it works, you know, without having to go and push it to an Android device, to push it to an iOS device, right? Having to jump from IDE to IDE, right? I can do that all inside of Visual Studio now, which is a huge, huge help, not just for game developers, but app developers in general, right, are loving this new feature. We took a look at the Android emulator.
Well, not specifically, but
we showed you how it was set up, and we did actually show you. I showed you an Android emulator. I just showed you Ripple.
Right.
I didn't show you the actual Android emulator, which you can use.
Right, from Visual Studio.
Yeah, but we use the Ripple emulator just because it's a little bit easier and quicker for us when we're doing a live demo. But feel free to use whichever one works best for you. We discussed the benefits of proper planning, so I did my apology. I told everybody how sorry I was, and I slapped myself on the wrist for that one. You know, so we discussed how to avoid what I fell into, and some best practices. We covered things like UML, how to do proper GDD. We talked TDD and even ADD.
Yeah. So documentation that, again, you want for a larger team or a larger project when you're setting those kinds of things up, and even to do even personally on your own project, just so you organize your thoughts. I know a lot of us have day jobs sometimes and we want to make games on the side. I know tons of people that like to do that and play around with that. And unfortunately, because of life plus job plus what I would like to do on the side, you know, there's a large lag time between those things. Having those documents even just to keep
yourself on point
and what you're doing as well and the planning and so on.
Yeah, I've got projects that I haven't touched in 6 months that if I go back into without documentation, I'm going to spend more time trying to get up to speed on what I was doing than actually coding.
And as far as the game goes, we added a quest system, we added sound, we got the game states for the menus
and so
on.
We built out the gameplay a little bit there. That was a lot of fun. So now you can cast some magic spells and as well, and we showed you how to do some quest system with the chaining quests. You know, so you can go kill Wilbur and then have the old man get mad at you, which is pretty cool. And then, yeah, at the end there, we took a look at our multiplayer example using Azure websites, Node.js, and WebSockets.
Great for the setup we were going for, but by all means, not a catch-all for every kind of multiplayer system.
Exactly.
But there's a lot of other things that you can use there once you've activated your cloud account, basically, and you're going in there and seeing what Azure offers you. You can branch out and play around with some other things, like setting up another Linux server or anything you need on the back end to do, you know, a larger...
Lots of room to grow with that, for
sure.
That's
right.
Awesome. Well, that brings us to the end. Thank you very much for tuning in. If you wouldn't mind, please take some time to fill out the poll here. That poll just gives us a little bit of feedback, lets us know, hey, did we touch on the topics that are interesting to you guys? You know, how were things? Just gives us that needed feedback so that we can tailor the content to best suit your needs.
Yeah, or if you want to see more of it, I mean, higher ratings always encourage them to call us back and get more stuff. So.
The higher the rating, the more likely we'll be back in the studio. So thank you very much. I hope that you found this very enjoyable and learned a little something. And I can't wait to see what you guys build with it. Thank you and happy coding.